He did his best and did it manfully, but I don't think he found that a pair of rampant boys, a pipe, or even the divine Plato, were very satisfactory substitutes for wife and child and home. Early as it was, he was at the station next morning to see Joe off. And thanks to him, she began her solitary journey with the pleasant memory of a familiar face smiling its farewell. A bunch of violets to keep her company, and best of all, the happy thought, well, the winter's gone, and I've written no books, earned no fortune, but I've made a friend worth having, and I'll try to keep him all my life. Chapter 35. Heartache. Whatever his motive might have been, Laurie studied to some purpose that year, for he graduated with honor and gave the Latin oration with the grace of a Phillips and the eloquence of a Demosthenes, so his friends said. They were all there. His grandfather, oh, so proud, Mr. and Mrs. March, John and Meg, Joe and Beth, and all exulted over him with the sincere admiration which boys make light of at the time, but failed to win from the world by any after triumphs. "I've got to stay for this confounded supper, but I shall be home early tomorrow. You'll come and meet me as usual, girls," Laurie said, as he put the sisters into the carriage after the joys of the day were over. He said girls, but he meant Joe, for she was the only one who kept up the old custom. She had not the heart to refuse her splendid, successful boy anything, and answered warmly, "I'll come, Teddy, rain or shine, and march before you, playing Hail the Conquering Hero Comes on a Jew's harp." Laurie thanked her with a look that made her think in a sudden panic, "Oh, dearie me, I know he'll say something, and then what shall I do?" Evening meditation and morning work somewhat allayed her fears, and having decided that she wouldn't be vain enough to think people were going to propose when she had given them every reason to know what her answer would be, she set forth at the appointed time, hoping Teddy wouldn't do anything to make her hurt his poor little feelings. A call at Meg's, and a refreshing sniff and sip at the Daisy and Demijohn, still further fortified her for the tête-à-tête. But when she saw a stalwart figure looming in the distance, she had a strong desire to turn about and run away. "Where's the Jew's harp, Joe?" cried Laurie, as soon as he was within speaking distance. "I forgot it." And Joe took heart again, for that salutation could not be called lover-like. She always used to take his arm on these occasions. Now she did not, and he made no complaint, which was a bad sign, but talked on rapidly about all sorts of faraway subjects, till they turned from the road into the little path that led homeward through the grove. Then he walked more slowly, suddenly lost his fine flow of language, and now and then a dreadful pause occurred. To rescue the conversation from one of the wells of silence into which it kept falling, Joe said hastily, "Now you must have a good long holiday." "I intend to." Something in his resolute tone made Joe look up quickly to find him looking down at her with an expression that assured her the dreaded moment had come, and made her put out her hand with an imploring, "No, Teddy, please don't." "I will, and you must hear me. It's no use, Joe. We've got to have it out. And the sooner the better for both of us," he answered, getting flushed and excited all at once. "Say what you like, then. I'll listen," said Joe, with a desperate sort of patience. Laurie was a young lover, but he was in earnest and meant to have it out, if he died in the attempt. So he plunged into the subject with characteristic impetuosity, saying in a voice that would get choky now and then, in spite of manful efforts to keep it steady, "I've loved you ever since I've known you, Joe. Couldn't help it. You've been so good to me. I've tried to show it, but you wouldn't let me. Now I'm going to make you hear and give me an answer, for I can't go on so any longer. I wanted to save you this. I thought you'd understand," began Joe, finding it a great deal harder than she expected. "I know you did. But girls are so queer, you never know what they mean. They say no when they mean yes, and drive a man out of his wits just for the fun of it," returned Laurie, entrenching himself behind an undeniable fact. "I don't. I never wanted to make you care for me so, and I went away to keep you from it, if I could. I thought so. It was like you, but it was no use. I only loved you all the more, and I worked hard to please you, and I gave up billiards and everything you didn't like, and waited, and never complained, for I hoped you'd love me, though I'm not half good enough. Here there was a choke that couldn't be controlled, so he decapitated buttercups until he cleared his confounded throat. You're a great deal too good for me. And I'm so grateful to you, and so proud and fond of you, I don't see why I can't love you as you want me to. I've tried, but I can't change the feeling, and it would be a lie to say I do when I don't. Really, truly, Joe. He stopped short and caught both her hands as he put his question with a look that she did not soon forget. Really, truly, dear. They were in the grove now, close by the stile. And when the last words fell reluctantly from Joe's lips, Laurie dropped her hands and turned as if to go on, but for once in his life that fence was too much for him. So he just laid his head down on the mossy post and stood so still that Joe was frightened. Oh, Teddy, I'm sorry. So desperately sorry. I could kill myself if it would do any good. I wish you wouldn't take it so hard. I can't help it. You know it's impossible for people to make themselves love other people if they don't, cried Joe, inelegantly but remorsefully, as she softly patted his shoulder, remembering the time when he had comforted her so long ago. They do sometimes, said a muffled voice from the post. I don't believe it's the right sort of love, and I'd rather not try it, was the decided answer. There was a long pause, while a blackbird sung blithely on the willow by the river, and the tall grass rustled in the wind. Presently Joe said very soberly, as she sat down on the step of the stile, Laurie, I want to tell you something. He started as if he had been shot, threw up his head, and cried out in a fierce tone, Don't tell me that, Joe, I can't bear it now. Tell what? She asked, wondering at his violence. That you love that old man. What old man? Demanded Joe, thinking he must mean his grandfather. That devilish professor you were always writing about. If you say you love him, I know I shall do something desperate. And he looked as if he would keep his word, as he clenched his hands with a wrathful spark in his eyes. Joe wanted to laugh, but restrained herself and said warmly, for she too was getting excited with all this, Don't swear, Teddy. He isn't old or anything bad, but good and kind, and the best friend I've got next to you. Pray don't fly into a passion. I want to be kind, but I know I shall get angry if you abuse my professor. I haven't the least idea of loving him or anybody else. But you will after a while, and then what will become of me? You'll love someone else too, like a sensible boy, and forget all this trouble. I can't love anyone else, and I'll never forget you, Joe, never, never, with a stamp to emphasize his passionate words. What shall I do with him? Sighed Joe, finding that emotions were more unmanageable than she expected. You haven't heard what I wanted to tell you. Sit down and listen, for indeed I want to do right and make you happy, she said, hoping to soothe him with a little reason, which proved that she knew nothing about love. Seeing a ray of hope in that last speech, Laurie threw himself down on the grass at her feet, leaned his arm on the lower step of the stile, and looked up at her with an expectant face. Now that arrangement was not conducive to calm speech or clear thought on Joe's part, for how could she say hard things to her boy while he watched her with eyes full of love and longing, and lashes still wet with the bitter drop or two her hardness of heart had wrung from him? She gently turned his head away, saying, as she stroked the wavy hair which had been allowed to grow for her sake, How touching that was, to be sure. I agree with Mother that you and I are not suited to each other, because our quick tempers and strong wills would probably make us very miserable, if we were so foolish as to... Joe paused a little over the last word, but Laurie uttered it with a rapturous expression.